Good evening. I'd like to call the April 5th, 2011 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance is to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank will be a few minutes late. Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I would not like to ask for an executive session tonight. We don't need one. Are there any members of the public who would like to address the legislature? All right. Legislators. Actually, I don't see any municipal officials either, right? Pam.
Yes, it's final, and we went over 100,000 in our census count this time. It was very exciting, yes. And there were so many people who got on board and helped us with it. It was incredible. All of the many landlords in the city, and particularly in College Town, where we've had problems in the past, they were very helpful. But I got to say that the census people themselves, they did a yeoman's job. They didn't just walk away from a door that didn't answer. They would call us on the committee and ask us to follow up and get to the landlords, and that there was a lot of detail that went into it that I felt was real reason why we went up over 100,000 this time. So I want to thank everybody here on the legislature and the staff, and of course Kevin Sutherland was just an incredible job helping us, and so we all should feel good that we are over the 100,000 mark and up as opposed to down, which is where most of the other counties around us have gone. So we should feel good about that. Thanks.
Thank you, Pam, and congratulations. Pam. Congratulations to everyone. Big deal. Pat.
I just wanted to mention a couple things today to give you a little update on the broadband committee and some of the things that we've been doing. Continue to be very impressed with the commitment and the work that the people on this committee are doing. It's very clear as we go through here with our three subcommittees that the work, the complexity of the work is a real challenge to begin with, and then the fact that we're kind of going after a moving target makes it even more challenging because there's so much happening right now in the field of broadband, and so we're not only trying to work within what we already know, but what we might be able to anticipate in the near future and long term too. So one of the things that the committee has done has been to request that we provide information from some outside sources to help the committee in its deliberations. And to that end, at our last meeting, we had a guest speaker from Cornell University, a Mr. Thomas Ball, who is a manager in the voice engineering division at Cornell, who came and spoke to the committee and was very helpful to us. At our meeting on April 25th, and one reason I'm mentioning this is because I'm hoping that you will put this on your calendars. We are going to have two people from the state representatives who are coming to speak to the committee. And because this will be information that we think will be of general interest, not just to the committee itself, but to other particular leaders here in Tompkins County, We are going to be specifically inviting members of the legislature, people from TCOG, other people from the community who might be interested to come to this meeting. So this meeting will be held on Monday, April 25th at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in the public library or corner room. The two people who are going to be speaking are David Solway, who is the director of the Broadband Program Office for New York State, Chief Information Officer, Office for Technology. He will be one of the speakers. Another is William Johnson, Deputy Director, Office of Cybersecurity, and he's with the New York State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services. They're going to provide an overview of their programs as they relate to state initiatives on broadband deployment, with a specific emphasis on broadband assessment and planning for rural areas. So that I hope that many of you will be able to attend that meeting. You will be receiving an invitation to it, but I just wanted to give you a heads up.
Thanks very much, Pat. Carol.
I just have a question for Pat. Is that instead of the 5:30 meeting or in addition to the 5:30 meeting?
That's instead of the 5:30 meeting this month. And I also did want to say thank you to Paula Younger for all the work that she's doing to organize these guests that are coming to join us and speak in our meetings.
Thank you, Pat. Frank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two items I wanted to mention to you with regard to the Water Resources Council, which doesn't really have a formal place on the agenda. As chairman, I wanted to let you know that we have formally asked the governor through the DEC by letter to extend the comment period that is being proposed for the revised SDGEIS to 90 days. And that letter went out over my signature as the chairman of that council after my subcommittee reviewed it. There's a lot of angst about not having enough time to review the revisions, and we wanted to make sure we got our oar in early. The second item with regard to the Water Resources Council, you've probably read something about the proposed dredging that's supposed to take place in the inlet, and the city has been working on it with Southwest Park as one of the optional places to place the spoils. We also weighed in on that. We were asked to weigh in on that one, and we did. We sent copies to Elizabeth Moran, the president of Ecologic, who the city hired, and Joanne Cornish, the director, the planning director for the city. I sent copies of both of these items. There were some items that we thought ought to be tightened up and tweaked a little bit, but I had a copy sent to Martha as chair, but on this particular one, on the dredging one, I only copied the city reps because it directly affects the city. If the rest of you would like a copy of our comments, I'd be happy to see that you get those. But thank you.
Yes, please.
You have a request already.
Okay, I'll see that everybody all gets right. A copy. Probably just as easy.
Thanks, Frank. Mike.
The County Civil War Commission, which the actual name of it is the Tompkins County Civil War Sesquicentennial Commemoration Commission. I don't know whether it's Tim or who gave it that name, but that's one to think about all the time. Has been very active, and we're working on a website. We're working on a number of things, including a lecture series, which starts next week. The sesquicentennial of the Civil War really starts on the 12th of April. That's the anniversary, 150th anniversary of the firing on Fort Sumter in South Carolina. The night before that, we will have a lecture at the Borg Warner Room of the Tompkins County Public Library, which is jointly sponsored by the library with us. We have invited Professor Pearl Poncet from Ithaca College, who specializes in history and what's happening at the era right before the Civil War, particularly in Kansas, is her specialty. We're looking very much forward to hearing Dr. Ponce. This is open to the public. It's at 6 o'clock p.m. Again, that's the 11th. That's Monday at the public library. Also, for those interested, the Dryden Town Historical Society will be having a lecture by our county historian, Carol Kamen, on Thursday, the 14th. She'll be discussing the Civil War Nurses program, or not program, the Civil War Nurses from Tompkins County that we've been commemorating. And I know Frank's got a couple of words to say about that, and at this point I'll defer to him.
A couple of meetings back, we had, where several of us are members of the Civil War Commission, but a couple of meetings back, I asked that copies of this brochure be distributed to our colleagues. TC3, we have started a nurses fund. The goal, if I'm correct, is $80,000. And
that's $80,000. $80,000
to set up an endowment as well as help fund some of the efforts. But we would like to encourage our colleagues to make a contribution to this. It'll be a fund that will stay, of course, with TC3, but it's specifically for the nursing program. And if you need another copy of the donation slip, we'd be happy to provide it for you. But worthwhile program. The individuals that Carol is chairing it, Janet Morgan is on it, Elizabeth Rollins is another member of the committee, and Margaret Munchmeyer is the fourth member. If you have any questions about this in the interest of time, Carol Kamen, Mike, or myself would be happy to answer
them. We'd really like to see participation from the whole legislature. The amount is within your own purview, but it can be whatever you think is appropriate. But it's not so much the amount as the participation.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. When and where is that lecture? On the 14th?
The library. Oh, the 14th?
You said the Kamen lecture on...
The lecture, which one? I'm sorry. We got one on the 11th at the Tompkins County Public Library. That's Dr. Ponce. And one on the 14th in the Village Hall, Dryden Village Hall, at 7 o'clock p.m. That's Carol Kamen speaking about the Civil War nurses.
Great. Thank you very much. Will.
Thank you, Martha. Mike, I got something from the History Center indicating that this program was also going to be featuring a Civil War buff named Mike Lane. Do you know anything about that?
Well, that was last week.
Oh, that was that. That's already happened.
So. They had a wonderful panel. I should say the History Center has been a wonderful partner in this effort, and they had a panel last week, and two of our members of the Civil War Commission, myself and Danny Wheeler, were there, along with Dr. Ponce. And talking about the relevance of the Civil War today.
Thank you. As many of you know, I am honored to have Ithaca College in my district. And this recent weeks, I've had two things that I'd like to tell you about. One, on a very, very snowy day, much like today, but even worse, I and several other people from the legislature, including Martha and Dooley and Frank and Mike, were you with us? I can't remember. Okay, but several of us went up and got a peek at the still under construction new athletic and events center that is being built on the the northeast corner of the campus. It is huge, and it just takes your breath away in terms of what they're doing. I had no idea. I mean, I'd seen the strange tower that they're building. But I do not appreciate the scale of which they are building. Now, imagine the largest swimming pool that you probably ever think, certainly in Ithaca. Turn that on its side. That's the width of their new pool, and it's going to be many times the length. It will be immense. It's a $65 million project, and they're just going great guns. And I think it'll be a real asset to this community when it comes online. So that was exciting. But another thing related to the college happened this past Friday, and I was I went to a local rally that had been called by some students on behalf of the dining workers who work for Ithaca College and frequently are not really partaking of the, I think, really good treatment that the college generally affords its workers, but they are in a separate category because they work for an outside corporation who hires that. And students, to their credit, have called upon the college to begin paying their workers a living wage. And it was a very spirited rally, discussions going on, and I encourage all of you, to whatever extent you have connections with Ithaca College, to encourage them to do something along this line. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Anyone else? Leslie.
Thanks. I'll use that as a segue. Just as we continue to do work for ourselves on compliance, not just with federal regulations, but just within our own regulations and so on that we have, are on a number of the contracts that we have to make sure that people are living up to our expectations in terms of paying people a living wage, good working environment and treatments, etc. So it just occurred to me that that's one of the things, because I think of all the times some of the contracts that we approve, small as they are, to make sure that those things are there, if these people are cognizant that it is an expectation of ours that workers that are associated with anything with the county are being treated in a manner that's respectful and fair and sustainable. Deputy County Administrator Paula Younger and I don't know who else was there, happened to be in a meeting last night, so it was interesting hearing Pat talk about the meeting coming up on broadband, because just listening to some of the people talk in the meeting from the rural areas about their struggles with getting wireless and internet service and so on, we were in the back yaying broadband. So hopefully, I didn't do it.
I can't turn this off.
Oh, see, I didn't point to anybody. So go ahead and out yourself. So it's really refreshing to hear, and hopefully we'll continue to publicize so people can hear that there's work being done and be hopeful that things will turn around for them pretty soon, especially for students who have work to do that require internet service and all of that, and they just can't in the evening. So thanks for the meeting, and hopefully we'll continue to get public input as well.
Thank you, Leslie. Anyone else? All right, for my report, I want to mention a couple of meetings that are coming up. Tomorrow night, regarding AES Cayuga and the IDA pilot, we have negotiated a revised pilot, and it's going to public hearing. But first, tomorrow night is a public meeting where we'll be presenting information and giving the public time to ask questions and really to dialogue about that. And I want to thank Joe in particular for preparing a lot of information in his usual great PowerPoints, and Jay Franklin has been a big help, been really leading the way on that. So that's tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at the Lansing Town Hall, and the public hearing is also at 7 o'clock in the Lansing Town Hall on Tuesday, April 12th, a week from tonight. I believe the press has gone out about that, but I just wanted to bring that to your attention. I want to thank the folks who have been working really hard on the road preservation law, Carol Chalk, Mike Lane, and others who worked on that. The meeting that you had last week, Joe and Bill Sesney and Jonathan, working on a new version of the law related to heavy trucks. And I wanted to say that since we have information from DEC Commissioner Joe Martens that it looks like he will be the new SGAS will probably not be coming out June 1st, but more like maybe end of the summer. I want to make sure that progress continues on this whole effort, and I know it's a really complicated thing, but I would say that sort of a deadline, if we can sort of focus on, say, June as a time frame instead of this month or May, I hope that that's doable and yet still gives people a sense of urgency that we really have to put this at the top of the list. In many cases, because we have to move on to other issues, the municipalities are really looking at noise and air control, air pollution ordinances, et cetera. So this is just the first of one of those issues. We haven't talked recently about our evaluation of direct reports, Kathy, Joe, Jonathan, and David Squires. I wanted to let you know that I did meet yesterday with Stephen Estes and Jackie Thomas in personnel to work out how they're going to be taking all the comments from everybody, from all the legislators and outside reviewers. I've sent a note about this to the committee that's working on this, but I wanted to just let you folks know that we are getting those documents in order. Jackie, in particular, has a lot of ideas about streamlining details about how the documents are formatted. No changes in the content, but details that will make them more streamlined and kind of user-friendly. In particular, user-friendly for them as they compile the information from all the people who submit it. So we expect we'll be able to send those forms to you or send you a link to access the forms. If you want hard copy, those can be given by April 15th. And then we will ask for return of those documents by April 25th, so 10 days. I wanted to just give you a heads up. Your taxes will be done. This has taken a bit of time because of their schedules and mine, but I think we're in place to move more quickly on this now. And I've asked the team that's working on this for a meeting. I've said that was also in my email, so that we can get together and go in detail over the process. I want to just mention the last TCOG meeting last week. It was a week and a half ago. It was a lot of always interesting topics. One was about the emerald ash borer, and I have an excellent report by Mark?
Whitmore.
Thank you. From Poverty Extension. I'll put this out there on the mailboxes. Also, we talked about the issue of the school districts being involved in TCOG. And people were very interested in the idea. It was actually in the bylaws of TCOG, or the founding bylaws, that school districts would be invited to join. It was thought that they probably wouldn't have time until after their elections and the budgets are passed. So perhaps the June meeting of TCOG would be on the agenda. And there is also a concern that we don't want to waste their time. And if the agendas are mostly about municipal issues like cell towers and dog control and health consortium, when they already have their own health insurance consortium, we didn't want to waste their time. But it's important to see if we can bring, if there's a way to bring them into TCOG, maybe with quarterly meetings that have particular agenda items that they'd be interested in. So I just wanted to mention that to you. And I'm actually really surprised that nobody mentioned the medication disposal event this Saturday. Really important. Three locations. This is for any used pet medicines or for personal medicines or over-the-counter, et cetera. A collection at TCAT on Willow Ave, Juniper Manor in Trumansburg, and also Newfield Garden Apartments. Details are, these flyers are around town, so I hope people can pay attention. The last two events that we held sort of collected record amounts of unused pharmaceuticals. And it's, in fact, the first event, Marcia, am I right, that we set the record for all communities in the country on that day. So if you have questions about that, the public can just call 211 and they can give you all the details. That's my report. Any questions? All right, Joe.
Thanks, Martha. I have a couple of updates tonight, and then I'll conclude my report by asking for you to consider the confirmation of an appointment to the assessment director position. I'll do that at the end of my report. As you recall, that's by a voice motion, and I will also offer an opportunity, if you would like to adjourn to executive session to talk about anything about that, we may. Otherwise, I will ask for your confirmation again at the end of my report. To begin with, first the fun stuff. It's not often I get to talk about having fun, dealing with the budgets and things as we do, but I did want to let you know that on March 23rd, I participated in something called Mayors on Wheels, which was a Meals on Wheels initiative. I'm not a mayor, certainly, but I was invited to participate. It took a few hours to help deliver meals to a lot of wonderful people in the community, including someone who I met for the first time named Sylvia Wall, who I learned was a founder of the program. So the first person we visited turned out to be one of the founders of the program. She's also a faithful viewer of these meetings, and so, as my kids would say, I'll give a shout out to Sylvia tonight. But it was a great experience, and really got to know more about FoodNet and about the people they serve. Back to more serious things. Email went out today to begin trying to schedule time for our first budget retreat for the 2012 budget. I guess this is the official kickoff of 2012. So if you look at your emails, we've thrown out, I think, three dates in the last week of April as possibilities. So if you'll take a peek, if those don't work out, we've even considered the idea of a Saturday morning meeting, if that would work out better for your schedules. So if you can get back to us relatively quickly, we'll get that organized, and off we go toward 2012. On the budget, state budget's done, obviously. I will report to Budget and Capital next week on the preliminary estimate of impact. It looks to be about $1 million, which is about $300,000 better than what the governor had proposed, but still not good. Still some significant reductions in a number of program areas in our budget. DSS, health, assessment, youth all took cuts. So again, next week I will be reporting to Budget and Capital on the specifics of that. I'll also be meeting with the department heads at our department head meeting next Wednesday to have a discussion about what we need to do to get our budget back into balance after these cuts. And shortly after that, we'll hope to come back to Budget and Capital to talk about a plan to do just that, to rebalance our budget. I did see today a report that many of you may have also seen that suggests the governor is now going to attempt to elevate the tax cap issue again, get that back on the front burner. So I think all of our expectations will be realized. I think the tax cap wasn't put off into another year. I think it's been put off to another day. It's something that we're going to have to focus on and I think speak about over the coming days. As all of you recall, the mantra was that tax cap would come with mandate relief, and we haven't seen that at all. So in terms of budget items, that's my report. I did want to let you know that our new public health director, Frank Krupa, still plans to be with us beginning next week. We'll have a series of things so we can all get to know Frank a little bit better, including a meet and greet before the department head meeting next Wednesday so we can get to know all of us. And I'm sure he'll be at this meeting the following Tuesday to say hello to all of you. Frank, I don't know if you had planned to talk about the CHA meeting.
Yeah,
you'll talk about that. That's my report.
Kathy?
Thanks. I just wondered if there's any word or inclination on the home rule legislation.
Well, I talked to Senator Seward's office, it was Senator O'Mara's office yesterday. There is no word. The sentiment still is, I think it's going to be difficult to get it through the Senate. And if any of you would like to make calls or send letters or emails, now is the time to do it. I think we've done a pretty good job of explaining why we need this, why it's good for the diversification of our revenue base, how it will affect property taxes if we don't get it, or programs. But if there's anything that you would like to do individually to reach out to senators, our senators, to appeal for them to approve this, it would be timely to do that.
Sorry, will you just remind me and Sylvia and anybody else that might be listening the approximate percentage on the tax base that the loss of that legislation would represent?
Right, this money-wise, this is about $900,000, which for us is a significant amount of money. It is in excess of 2% on levy. So if we had a choice of raising $900,000, if we had to raise it to the property tax levy, it's about 2.25% of an increase on the property tax levy to raise the same amount of money. If you look at it the other way, it's $900,000 in program cuts at a time that we've all already dug pretty deep and know that we're going to have to dig deeper.
Thank you.
And I sent all of you the letter that I'd sent to Senator Nozzolio. Did have a good phone conversation with him, but yeah, we need to follow up some more. I've got Will, Frank, and then Peter.
Joe, I was very happy to hear that you did the mayors on the meal delivery with the what did they call the mayors on wheels. And I got a call from my good friend Sylvia, who was just thrilled to have you here at her door. And I would encourage other people, if you haven't done this, they do this once a year, and I'm sure they'd be happy to have you any week. But they formally organize this, and it's a really, really neat kind of thing. I was not able to do it this year, but I certainly will do it again. And I also neglected to mention you were part of that group that went up on a very snowy day to Ithaca College, and I really appreciated it. It was a good exchange of information, learning about their financial situation, but also explaining the county's situation. I thought it was a really good start in terms of exchanging information.
Thanks, Will. Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Joe, the step that you mentioned regarding meeting with the Budget Committee, with once the department heads are met with, pertaining to the effect of the $1 million. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to, my suspicion is there'll be some sort of a write-up on that.
Of course, yes.
Can you somehow, I mean, every single program committee, I'm sure, is going to have some hurt in that. Unfortunately, I think Health and Human Services is going to take the largest shot in that. I would certainly appreciate any information you could pass along in that regard. And by the way, I'm glad to see you survived all the interviews for public health director, assessment director, and you were able to get some rest this weekend. One thing Will didn't mention about that trip up to Ithaca College, the place is so large. I think I heard them say it was 30,000 square feet. It was huge. They can get 7,500 people in that. And we were talking with the Anthony Hobson and Carl Segresi. They said that in the event, I asked them, in the event of an emergency, once this is completed, can that be used as, heaven forbid, an emergency shelter if we ever have to pack everybody, if we ever have an earthquake or something like that here? And they said, absolutely. It's set up so that they could accommodate 7,500 people. I mean, it's a huge. Will's description is right on the money. It was huge.
And that's just one layer. Think if they stacked people.
Well, Joe's holding out, or was it Will, holding out to have the top loft in that the knife that was going up, you know, the thing that's... It's a
tile knife.
Yeah. It was really pretty. Everybody seemed to like that. And we were arguing over what colors they could put up there.
Peter.
Joe,
can you use your mic, Peter?
Sorry. Joe, I have a question about your report.
Yes.
The reduction of the hit from $1.3 million to $1 million. Where was the $300,000? Where did it come from?
A couple of key areas. You may remember that we had talked about a number of programs that affected youth and DSS that had been discrete, separate programs funded by the state. And the governor had proposed that those be replaced with a single block grant. And in the process of converting those individual programs to a block grant, which we'd have to compete for, the amount of money appropriated for those programs was cut in half. So when the first estimate was put together, since the programs had really been eliminated, a number of youth programs and DSS programs, we could assume only that we would lose all the money for all of those programs. And that was about $600,000 for the programs. The legislature rejected the block grant approach and the competitive nature of going after that money. However, they accepted the governor's funding cuts. So what has happened for most of those programs is we're getting about 50 cents on the dollar in the upcoming year compared to last year. So that cut that reduced a $600,000 cut to a $300,000 cut. And that's really the major difference since the governor presented his budget and the legislature approved theirs.
Okay, so your $1.3 million was under the assumption that we would not win any of the competition for block grants. Is that?
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay.
Right.
Thank you. Oh, Martha, while I have the microphone here, there was a thing going around about the workforce and WIB and whether I was on it or not.
And I just looked down at my note and said, oh, I was supposed to appoint Peter to the WIB. So as part of my chair's report, so I would like to make the appointment of Peter Stein to the Workforce Investment Board for a term expiring June 30, 2011.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. Yeah.
And if there's no other questions about my main report, I'd like to turn to the appointments of the Director of Assessment and ask if anybody would like to move this to executive session and talk about anything before I begin kind of a recommendation. If not, then let me get on with another bit of good news. I am here tonight to ask for your confirmation of the appointment of Jay Franklin to the position of Assessment Director. I think we've all come to know Jay over the past many months, probably before that. He's been in the Assessment Department for, I think, 14 years. So we've come to know Jay over a long career, especially a long career for a fairly young person. And during the course of his work in the Assessment Department, he has been a major contributor to the quality of a department that I think New York State recognizes as the best assessment operation in New York State. He's been very much a part of that. And as interim director over the past more than a year, I think he's shown us even more of not only his potential, but also what he is actually able to achieve. We have gone through a process in selecting this position. As most of you know, many of our department heads are subject to civil service. So before you can be appointed a department head in a number of our departments, you have to score very high on a civil service test. And we have gone through that process in the selection of Jay as the assessment director. This was kind of an unusual testing process where we had a number of internal candidates who were eligible to take the test promotionally. So a promotional test was given, as was an open competitive test. So people from the outside were also allowed to take the test. But as all of you know, the promotional test really is the preferred list. So you go to that first. So tests were given. Jay scored number one. I'm always envious when I say that somebody scored a 95 because I took a civil service test one time and didn't score nearly that high. But he scored very well on the test. As the process went on, we chose to interview Jay as the top candidate on the promotional list. We also interviewed the only candidate on the open competitive list. So we did conduct interviews. I asked the two committee chairs who have involvement with this department, Mike Lane and Jim Dennis, to join an interview team. I also asked Paula Younger on my staff to join us as well. We conducted interviews last week. I will tell you that both of the individuals interviewed were very confident, very technically proficient, interviewed very well. But in the end, the committee, to a person, has recommended that Jay receive the appointment. I don't know that I need to add any more accolades. I think all of you know Jay. I think you've seen what he's done in explaining this very complex business of assessment to individuals at many levels, to the ordinary taxpayer, to me, to you, to the professionals in the business. I think he does an extremely good job. And he has maintained the quality of, again, an operation that objectively is the best in New York State. So I'm asking for you to confirm my appointment of Jay. To do that, as you recall, it's by voice, so we would need a motion of confirmation in a second and then a vote.
Thank you, Joe. I have hands. All right, we'll go around. Dooley?
I would like to make that motion.
Okay.
But so would everybody else.
We do by acclamation, unanimously make the motion? Yeah. Carol?
I'd like to comment before we vote.
Well, we're going to get the motion on the floor.
One person makes a motion that can be unanimously seconded.
So Dooley has moved it. Would this be, would you like to unanimously second that? If you raise your hand, please, if you would like to do so. All right. Thank you. So, Carol?
Oh, I just wanted to, in particular, thank Jay for and tell people about the opportunity I've had to work closely with Jay in these last few months as on the TCOG Gas Drilling Task Force Committee on Assessment and Land Valuation. And it's this activity started up just at the beginning of the year as Jay was absorbing some reductions to his budget and staff. This committee geared up, and Jay, with just incredible patience, has been assisting the work of that committee, patiently answering all our questions, supporting the work, making his conference room available, which, by the way, if you have small groups of, 12 or so or less, don't forget that conference room. And generally being available to us, to the realtors and the bankers and the citizens who have participated in that process. So it's just with great patience. So I, in particular, appreciate and am glad that we are moving to make his position permanent. Thanks.
Brian?
Just a quick comment, because looking around here, I'm probably the only legislator here that actually has worked at the Tompkins County Assessment Department way back when. And I'm going to jump the gun a little bit and presume that, Jay, that you get appointed. And I know that your dad would be very proud. I don't know how many people actually know that his dad, Don, was also director of the Assessment Department and followed up on Tom Payne. And between the two of them, they built what is today, as been stated, probably the best assessment department in the state. And I know that Jay's going to continue that. But I do know that your dad would be very proud today.
Thank you, Brian. Carol, Pam?
I just wanted to relay a situation for a group of my constituents who had been very unhappy with their assessment, and they were quite angry about it, and they were saying the things that people often say about our government, and they felt that a real injustice had been done. And then about 6 months later, I had another conversation, and they had a meeting, or maybe several meetings, with Jay. They had worked through their differences, and they had nothing but good things to say about Jay and the way that he handled the situation, his integrity, and his willingness to meet them. And so I that alone would make me want to confirm him tonight, but I have seen him in other places, and I think he's just a remarkable person, and I think we are very fortunate to have him.
Thank you, Pam. Frank.
Thanks, Martha. Just to add to what you've already said, I mean, I've worked with Jay for every year that he's been there, and I have to endorse everything that's been said, including what Brian has described, because I remember Tom Payne, and I remember Don Franklin, and I think you're following in very good footsteps with Valeria Coggan as well. I mean, we have an outstanding department. However, recently, you've noticed popping up across the county, and Pam reminded me of this, because of the reassessment, and periodically with approximately 40,000 parcels that we have to look at every once in a while, there are a number of TPs that have sprung up around the county. And there was an article in the paper a day or so back that explained what those were. And I understand Jay went out himself and tried to evaluate every one of those teepees. So I want to thank you very much for doing that, and you didn't have to carry a flintlock to do it. So I I mean, I join Pam with hope we're not jumping the gun, but I hope you'll accept the appointment. I mean, you know, it's up to you. Really, Joe can say what he wants, but if you don't want to accept it, you don't have to.
I just want to add that anybody who can complete whole sentences with his triplets by itself, that's enough to qualify you for the job. But I want to say also that I've gotten to know Jake a lot better through the AES renegotiation process. We had I and Arthur at TCAD just counted up. We had 10 meetings since June negotiating with AES and 7 meetings in addition with just the county IDA school district team. And Jay led that process with such professionalism and skill and true, you know, real creativity and real intellectual honesty about that. And it was really extremely well done and really helped us get through a really difficult process. So thank you very much, Jay. Leslie.
I just want to say there are 3 professions that I never want to have. One is being an assessment, any kind of assessor, law enforcement, or being a journalist. People really love to have you around when good things are going on, and then they really dislike you a lot of the other times. So I just want to congratulate you for staying in there and putting up with the dislike, because you're such a great guy. So thanks for doing this, Jay.
I'm ready to vote. All in favor of the appointment of Jay Franklin to Director of Assessment? Any opposed? That is unanimous. Thank you so much, Jay. I want to congratulate Joe, who will have all permanent department heads to work with as of Monday, mm-hmm. for the first time in a year and a half,
true.
I think, right?
That is very true.
Okay. Good. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I want to thank Leslin for not including lawyer in that list.
Most of the times they love you, man.
It probably just didn't occur to me. I just wanted to report, you know, as you know, periodically we get settlement checks on the multi-county lawsuit against the drug companies who overcharged us on Medicaid. And this past week we got another check for $4,905.55. So this is turning out pretty well for the county. That's my report.
Thank you, David. Don't spend it all in one place.
See, Jonathan, you have good news all the time.
Any questions for Jonathan? David Squires, Finance Director.
In conjunction with the announcement about the good fortune in the census, the growth in the county, one of the few counties in upstate New York that experienced growth, population growth, it does have an impact, though, on certain things. Sales taxes currently distributed based upon the census population. And so there's a dramatic shift, actually, in the numbers. Almost every municipality increased, but it has unequal effects because it's the ratio of the total population outside the city that counts in the. So I distributed, put in your box tonight, a charts which show that when the new census, when we implement the census population figures into the sales tax formula, which would probably be the second quarter of the year, 8 out of the 15 municipalities will have decreases in shares because of the shifting. The rural areas that represents Frank had growth that actually took away from what people might have expected, the more dynamic areas like Lansing is going to have a reduction in shares. Ulysses, and there's various factors, even though their population went up, their share relative to what it was previously results in a decline. Villages, all the villages have declines in their share because they share based upon their town's population. And a case in point in Ulysses' share goes down because Trumansburg's share of the Ulysses portion goes up. Therefore, the town gets less of a piece of the pie. So all things being equal, if sales tax stayed flat, the village of Groton would experience a substantial reduction in their share because their piece goes down by 9%. But so that's the news there. I didn't go back and see what it was between 1990 and 2000, but I know that there were some changes.
Thank you.
Report.
Any questions for David? Well, I think we might need a report on that at TCOG. Carol?
Yeah, I have a question. I'm not sure if it's for Dave or for Pam, or maybe we just don't know the answer yet. How did these changes in population distribution compare with the trend we've seen in other recent decades? Is this the way that the trend has been going, or is this change for this decade very different than
you mean in the county,
what we saw
within the county?
Within the county and then among our municipalities, as David just described.
I know that the city has not grown. I mean, the city has been dropping, I think, or not growing at all. So it did increase this time, but I don't know all of them.
I think what David's saying is what's paradoxical is an entity might increase
right.
but actually lose share depending upon where
right.
it fits, depending upon how fast others grew.
Or entities within that town grew as part of that.
So like when you hear on the news that New York is losing population, no, it didn't lose population. It didn't grow as fast as other states, which is why we're losing congressional seats. But. All right. Thank you all. Thank you, David. Resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda. Carol.
Yes. I would like permission to add a resolution that is in your packet. Authorization to execute construction funding agreement with New York State DOT Newfield Depot Road Bridge over Cayuga Inlet.
Okay. Is there a second to that? Pam seconds. All in favor of adding that to the agenda, please raise your hand. One, two, three. Any opposed? All right, that's added.
Thank you.
Anything else? All right, on the consent agenda, I will read the titles, and if you want anything pulled off, please let me know. We have some revised resolutions. I'm not sure I get them right. Revised A. Award of contract, now you know what, I need the title, it's revised. Award of contract, terminal cafe, gift shop, vending machines, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Revised B, as adopted by the committee, award of contract, terminal parking lots, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. C, authorization to execute a supplemental agreement with Barton and LaJudice, PC for construction inspection services, bridge painting, various locations. Resolution D, award of bid, Tompkins County Solid Waste Hauling and Disposal Service. And an appointment of Dooley Kiefer to the Ethics Advisory Board. And E. Sorry.
Please pull E.
Appointment of hearing panel members. Okay. All right. Is there a motion for the consent agenda? Pam moves, or a second? Seconded by Carol. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Thank you. That's unanimous. All right. I would like to take us to Capital Plan Review Committee so that Aurel can go home. We had a brief meeting before this legislature meeting. Other than that, haven't had a meeting since the last time I reported, but we do have the resolution. I'd like to have Dooley, Vice Chair of the Committee, present resolution.
Yes, I'd like to move appropriation from contingent fund to investigate options to house day reporting and family treatment court programs at the Human Service Building. I move it.
And that's the revised as adopted by the committee that should be in your folders on your desk. All right. And Frank seconds. Thank you. Do you want to speak to it, Dooley? Anyone? Kathy.
much of the discussion in committee and on the floor has touched on the lack of conference room space for the county and for public use downtown. One of the things that I'm pleased about is that at committee today, and based on previous discussion, we got added into the fourth whereas some language about utilizing, an additional whereas. You'll see it in bold. The scope shall include exploration of opportunities that could allow for limited use of the Beverly Livesey Conference Room when not in use by the day reporting program. I'm glad that's been included. I still got serious concerns because I know that there's departments that are having issues around not having enough conference room space, and the loss of the Beverly Livesey Conference Room space is going to be felt among county departments as well as in downtown Ithaca. So I'm hoping that the scope of the work, having been adjusted, will adequately explore and will report back to the committee and for the public an explanation of whether that space can be used still, at least in afternoons or some afternoons or evenings, for other departments and or for the public's use. But regardless, that's why I'm voting no, because I want to make sure that everybody knows we're paying attention to this. We know it's a serious concern and that it's part of the discussion and part of what's being taken into consideration in these tough times.
Thank you, Kathy. Anyone else?
Yes.
Frank.
I think we owe a vote of thanks to our staff. In the face of a lot of other work that's been going on, pulling together this scope of services and sharing it, obviously, with the Capital Programs Committee did take quite a bit of time. And meeting to get the price as to where it is, I want to draw your attention that that is a not-to-exceed price. And the time frame is 60 days, as I recall. So it's going to be rather rapid. But we've been, Mike and I can attest, having chaired both space needs committees in one version or another over the last several years, this is the type of a review that is sorely needed to make sure that we're taking and making the best use of the space that we already have without building on or, in one case, buying another building. We're trying to utilize our existing space. So I really want to compliment, in particular, Arel. Are you here? Yes, you are. For the work that he's been doing, because this isn't the only project that you've been on lately. Something about this building, too. Thanks, Martha.
Thank you, Frank. Anyone else? I'd like to point out in your folder is a hard copy of the scope of work, and the committee asked, one, two, three, that the fifth whereas about exploring opportunities for the use of the Livesey Conference Room when not being used by day reporting. We asked that. We took out the words if possible. We didn't want that contingent. We wanted to make sure that that is included in the scope. So, Will?
Thank you, Martha. I actually share a lot of the concerns expressed by Kathy, and I'm glad that the scope does look into the possibility of a multi-use for that room at off hours. And I will vote for this because I think it's a study, but I continue to be very, very uncertain as to whether this is the way to go. So I will be approaching this with an open mind.
And this is just a study to make to see whether it's physically possible, not a commitment to do it. Right. So, are we ready to vote? It's a short form roll call.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Would anyone like to be recorded as no? Kathy Herrera? Okay. All right. Thanks. I'm sorry?
Did you ask for no?
I said, would anyone like to be recorded as no? And Kathy?
You.
Okay, Leslie and Kathy. Okay, that passes 13 to 2. Thank you all, and thank you, Arel. So, to go to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McKean Claremont.
No report.
Thank you. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Health Committee will be meeting on the 13th. Which is a week from tomorrow at our usual time, 3:30. I'll enlighten you with the results of that committee work at the following legislative meeting. But I do want to announce that we're having a special meeting on the 18th, which is a Monday. We're expecting Jack Vineski. If you recall, we've had a we've hired a consultant to look at our certified health agency, and we are expecting at the meeting on the 18th a report from him to review the recommendations in the report. There will be no vote that night or that evening, simply an opportunity for individuals to hear what the report contains. We're inviting, in addition to the Health Committee and its members, of course, we're inviting the Board of Health and the rest of this legislature to attend that meeting. It's going to be up at the Health Department in the new conference room, the one that we had that gathering at a couple of weeks back. But that'll be the 18th, 4:30, and hope that as many of you that can attend will attend, because it's critical information that we really do need to have for deciding on which way to take that shot. As far as the report goes, we hope to have copies in your hands. We're hoping Friday before, at no later than the Friday before that Monday there. We're trying to get them printed, and we'll hope to have them out. Joe, is there anything else that you want to?
No, I think you got it.
And that's the first day that our new public health director will be on board. So my hope is that he will be able to attend that as well.
I think starting Monday?
Yeah, I think he'll be here next week. So I think he'll have a few days to acclimate himself before we hit
Sorry.
Him with that.
Yeah, I keep forgetting there's a week in there, isn't there? Sorry.
Thank you, Frank. Dooley?
Frank, I just want to make sure, did the Water Resources Council get moved to a different day?
No.
So it's also on 4/18.
4/18, yeah. The reason that we had to have this special meeting on the day that we're having it is because Passover, to accommodate the schedules of those that that abide by the guidelines of Passover, we needed to make sure that we didn't meet the following day. Remember, we've moved our meeting, our legislative meeting, from the following day to the Wednesday to accommodate Passover. So Jack Vineski could only come on the 18th. And that's part of the reason that we had to set this up for when we did. So I apologize for the short notice, which may seem to be short notice, and we didn't really have time to check with every member of the legislature, every member of the Health Committee, and every member of the Board of Health. But in order to get, because we're on a critical path for the report itself and a decision process, we wanted to make sure that people had an opportunity to come.
What good does it do if people can't make it?
Well, so far, most people can.
How do you know if you didn't ask? I wasn't asked ahead of time.
Excuse me.
Please raise your hand when
no,
you
I'm
speak.
Done.
Carol?
Could you just please clarify the date, the time, and the place?
The 18th, 4:30. At the new health department in the conference room. I have one more item, if there isn't anything else on that. I'm the representative to the REC partnership, and we had a meeting last week. I want to thank both Will and Pam, for being able to come to that. I'm going to leave this out on the top of our mailboxes. It's a video that describes some of the funding and some of the concerns that the REC partnership is going through, and it involves most of the municipalities that we represent. So if you'd like to take it and look it over, please do.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Martha.
Thank you. I'd like to go to GO and ask Mike that you, in particular, go right to Resolution E.
Can we do that first?
Yes, please.
Sure. Resolution E is the appointment of hearing panel members, temporary board of assessment review, and I so move.
Is there a second? Jim seconds. And Leslyn, you pulled that off.
Yeah, my usual mantra. I just want to know how the members get chosen for this committee. Is there a call to serve? I don't remember seeing anything.
I see Jay's going to speak, but may I just mention that these are very, this is a pretty much a technical committee. Folks that are familiar with real estate values, the real estate market, and things like that. This is a board that will also take care of situations where there might be a conflict of interest on one of the other boards. And Jay, you can add whatever you'd like to that.
These are the five of the members have been serving since probably 2000, give or take a year. There is one new appointee this year, or to be appointee, Josh Lauer. He applied through the board office, and that's where his name was brought forward. But for outreach, we typically start them off on a local board of assessment review. The towns appoint that, and then they'll move up to the county board. It's an odd position to be put in as a department head. This is a board that's reviewing complaints against our office. So to nominate people to this,
it's odd.
It's just very hard to do that. But we have a very competent board. We've kept with those same names. If there's people who serve on the local boards that want to be moved up, I'm more than happy to bring them to your attention for approval. If there's any other process we can do, give me a yell, and we'll try to go through with that.
So I'd like to talk with you more just about it and the process. I understand what you're saying about how difficult a position it is for you to be in, but I'm just interested in, like, the two new people you said came from having served on their local.
The one new, I don't believe Josh did serve on the local. Josh is one of the season ticket holders in my office.
I know Josh very well.
You know, just kind of so to speak, and Josh is like, I want to serve on this board. A couple years ago, he wanted to serve on the local advisory board, so I passed his name to the city to start him off there. But you'll have an email in your inbox tomorrow morning from me. So
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Kathy?
And Kathy as well.
Thank you, Jay. Anything else?
Yeah, one question.
Frank?
Jay, I'm reminded that pretty soon the list for our individual grievance day assignments will be out. Is there any way, I'm listening to Kathy Herrera, is there any way to let us know early when that may happen so we can accommodate the schedule?
Yeah, they will be the second and third week of May. We're waiting for, I believe, just the town of Danby to finalize their date. Hopefully they were either going to do it tonight or last night. I'm not sure when their town board meetings were. But as soon as we get word from them, we'll have it in your mailboxes that next morning.
Thank you.
May I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
So the only way for turnover on this board is if somebody here doesn't want to serve anymore? And then is this just like a maximum number of people on this board?
Yeah, there is a full board of assessment review that serve at five-year intervals. This temporary hearing panels have to come each year for appointment. They're not until they want to serve again, but we just keep bringing forward those same names one year after the other until we have more applicants coming in.
Okay. I will talk more. Thank you.
Pat?
Jay, you mentioned you would put in our mailbox. Do you think you could send an email for those of us that don't get in here that often to pick up our mail? Thank you.
I think Lansing's is the 16th.
Okay.
That's one that I
know. Anything else? Ready to vote on Resolution 80? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mike, do you want to go through the rest of your report?
Well, most of what we did was, in the two meetings, was to spend time on our redistricting issue. And The other things are really represented by the resolutions we have tonight. So unless there are questions, I'll move right to those.
Sure, go ahead.
Resolution G, I'm going to move the one in the packet. I know Dooley has a substitute. If she wants to move that, she can. I have looked at that. Designation of name for the building located at 214-216 Martin Luther King Jr. Street, West State Street, as the Human Services Annex. I so move.
Is there a second? Dave seconds. Any questions, discussion? Dooley?
I want to explain why I am offering some amendments to the committee resolution, and it's listed as a substitute in your packet. The first whereas in my head is the historic statement. We're purchasing a building that everybody knows at Carpet Bazaar at 214-216 West State Street. That's how it's listed in the phone book. So I thought it was reasonable to describe it the way it is historically, and to add that the County Office for the Aging is moving specifically out of the courthouse, which is why there's room for the courts, more room for the courts. The second and third whereases are they're not substantive changes at all. The fourth whereas, I wanted us to acknowledge that the County Office for the Aging is not the only entity that's going to be in that building, and that what is being looked at is compatible human service type agencies to fill up the extra space. And since the use of the building will be human service oriented, it seemed reasonable to make that point in the fourth whereas. And I inserted HSB because that's how we refer to the Human Services Building. And in the resolved, I inserted HSA because that's a possible acronym for the Human Services Annex. So that's the totality of my changes, and I hope that they will be acceptable to the mover and the seconder.
They would be friendly to me. I don't see anything here that's objectionable.
And Dave? Okay. Pat and then Kathy?
Let me ask a question about adding in the last whereas and other compatible human service type activity. Would that at some point in the future limit the kind of things that we could put in there if at some point there seemed to be some other kind of activity that it made sense? And I'm even thinking of something like storage or something like that, that we might decide that we want to use part of that building for. Would we be limiting ourselves by adding that phrase to it? And I just question whether we really want to do that.
Well, I don't know if it would limit the actual future use. It's my understanding that that's our present intent, and that's all I meant by that.
I wouldn't read it as limiting that. We can always make changes in what we do.
Kathy, and then Pam, and then Carol.
Thank you. I'll start out by saying that I share similar concerns to the one Pat expressed, that the phrase that's being suggested for the fourth whereas does box us in a little bit. Although people can say what the intent is, I think it's better just not to say it. My main concern, though, is the change of the wording in the first whereas. We have a naming policy. We accepted the name of Martin Luther King Jr. Street, and I'm concerned about using historic rationale for reverting to a wording that we don't necessarily prefer anymore, and I'd just like for people to consider that in ways that we're trying to be consistent with our diversity and inclusion policies, and just say that I don't have any problem with adding from the lower level of the county courthouse, but I'd really like the wording of the street name to remain as was original in the original whereas.
Is that a motion?
Just making the argument.
No, we're not going to
the motion and the motion. It's already been said it was friendly. I'm just making the case.
No,
fair-minded people can say what they want to.
You're certainly welcome to make an
amendment. I don't want to get into that. It's already 6:45.
Julie?
I certainly did not change the resolve, because that is what we now do. And I left at Martin Luther King Jr. Street as the address of our new building. And in fact, it's our first official building on that new street. So I had no intention of changing our policy. It was history and now. And I think it shows the right direction. That's all
May
I wanted
just respond to
say.
To that? What yeah. I said was, I'm concerned about us invoking history and putting it in the first whereas. We can do that on every resolution then if we want to, and it undermines the policy, in my opinion.
Okay, I've got Pam and then Carol, and then I think an amendment is easy. This is the resolution that's on the floor. It's easy to amend it if anybody wants to adjust. Pam, Carol, and Pat.
I would like to amend this resolution in the first whereas to restore the original wording in the first phrase, where it's changed from Martin Luther King / West State Street to the other way. And I would like it to go back to the way
point
it was
of
originally.
Order.
Yeah, Mike.
Maybe the best way I could suggest to handle this would if I just ask Julie if she wants to move the substitute. I said it would be friendly to me. I didn't hear the seconder say that.
Yeah,
maybe this is an easier
maybe
way.
He said it was.
He did. So this is what's on the floor.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. So the motion is to remove the parentheses and make it go back to say 214, 216 Martin Luther King Jr. Street / West State
yes.
Street. That's the amendment that's proposed. Is there a second? Kathy seconds. All right. Any discussion of that?
Yes.
Frank.
Not to incur anyone's wrath, but I agree with Dooley. The opportunity here, we're here to talk about the naming of the building, not to argue over the address. I want to remind you that the whereases are simply leading up to the resolve. They don't set the stage. We can change and alter things in whereases. As Mike has already said, it doesn't lock us in to description that's in the last whereas if we want to change something. However, that the street has been known as State Street for quite some time, and I think we're getting into, I'd rather not get into a heated discussion about a whereas as opposed to the resolve. And in that regard, I would like to know what the process is for naming a building. The HSA building seems pretty dull to me. I would like to go back to what Peter and I agreed to some time ago and call it, you know, the Kofa Cabana.
Okay. You know, I'm not sure how Frank got in here. Carol was next, and then Pat.
You recognize me.
I know. I don't know where I was, what I was thinking.
What you were thinking?
I don't know. Carol, then Pat. Okay, Carol.
Well, my original comment was that I am planning to vote for this. I did want to just in passing mention my dismay at reading the county policy, which is in our packets, that we are, that our county policy of actually naming buildings in boring ways. I am dismayed that that's what we do. Kofa Cabana was not where I was going to go, but I would have preferred to see a process and, I don't know, use of this to recognize it. You know, there's so many people and so many organizations and so much history in this town that at some point it would be nice to revisit that policy.
That's possible.
On
committee
the
work?
On the address, I will make one more attempt to please everybody and suggest that we go back to the original wording, Martin Luther King Jr., West State Street, in parentheses, formerly known as, or have we resolved that issue?
I think we're done.
We're done on that issue? Okay, then I won't.
I pass. Go ahead. Brian.
Just ask Leslin, as long as we're doing all this,
Martin Luther King Jr. Street, there actually is an east and a west.
That's what I was going to say.
So
right.
That needs to be inserted in there.
In the title as well.
It's west. That's what
west.
I was going to say.
Right. And in the resolve. Is there anywhere else it shows up? That's what we call a manifest error.
The title.
Yeah, in the title. Right. Okay. All right, thank you. Are we ready to vote on the amendment, which is to reverse that in the first whereas? All in favor of reversing it? All in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, and Jim's in the room. Okay. So in the first whereas, then that language is goes back to the original way. Is there anything else? Are we ready to vote on the this substitute motion with that amendment? All in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Opposed. That passes 13 to 1. All right, thank you, Mike. Back to.
I also have resolution H. And the one that was handed out, because there was a few revisions made at the special meeting right before this legislature meeting. This is creation of an independent redistricting commission, and I so move.
Is there a second? Pat seconds.
May I speak to it? This is a culmination of a lot of hard work by our committee, and I'd like to thank all of them, Dave and Peter, Pat and Dooley. We spent a lot of time thinking about what an independent redistricting commission might look like. We spent a lot of time in investigation, listening to other people talk to us about this. We had a proposed memorandum that we've gone through line by line. We've made various revisions. I don't think any of the revisions tonight are very substantive. They're pretty much the same scenario. And basically what it says is we will have a commission of 9 persons appointed by this legislature. The legislature will appoint the chair of that commission. The commission will appoint its own vice chair, a total of 9 people. And they will have until next March to come up with a recommendation to the legislature of a plan pursuant to our charter. Their meetings will be open to the public. There will be a lot of them. They'll do investigation. They'll look at the census data and other factors about neighborhoods and wards and towns and villages and come back to us. We will look at that, at their recommendation. We then have the ability to adopt their recommendation or send it back for further work to them. I think this is a great leap forward for good government, because we're allowing and trusting the people to do this. They will be folks that have familiarity with government. There will be no elected officials. There will be no party officers that will be appointed. We've already gathered a list of about 40 people from all the news accounts we've had out there. We will be advertising for more people who are interested. Those people will then receive a letter from us and an application form. And then if they're really interested, we will then receive that application back. We will review those, and we will come forward with a group to this legislature. That's, in a nutshell, the process.
Thank you, Mike, and I do agree this is a great step. Thank you for all the hard work that's gone into it. Nathan.
Yes, I'd like to also thank Mike and the committee for working on this. This is an excellent resolution and also a charter or memorandum, I'm sorry. But I did have a question, Mike, about education and training. You know, as you know, with redistricting, it can be very complicated, especially when you get into areas of communities of interest, you know, whether you're looking at urban and rural and suburban or community, ethnic communities, students even, right? And so what type of education is going to be given to the committee members before they really dive into the process?
We really haven't discussed, for example, sending them to seminars or things like that. I know that you have looked into this and participated in some of those, and I think that's great. If there are those opportunities out there, if the League of Women Voters could come in and talk to this group, I think that would be wonderful. We've had in the past the League has come in from the state, and perhaps we could look at something like that. Okay. There may be other groups. Yeah. I'd be glad for your thoughts on it.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Frank, and then Dooley, and then Carol.
Call on me first. This okay. Mike, I noticed in the several-page write-up that there's going to be an effort to move meetings around of the group. Do you have any idea? I mean, I realize it's very preliminary, but is it your intention to suggest that they meet once a month? I mean, would it be frequently or once a quarter? Do you have any idea? And perhaps
I really don't want to suggest that to them. I think that they need to determine that themselves. They need to determine what their scope of work is. They need to get together and know who they are as a group to work with. And I think, you know, personally, maybe once a month would be fine. But maybe they want to meet twice a month. I think that should be open to the group.
And from what I'm reading, those meetings will be open so that any member of the public or anyone else can sit in and listen in on those meetings.
Absolutely.
One other question. Will the people that serve be reimbursed in any way?
No.
Not even from mileage to these?
I don't know if you want to propose a resolution to that effect. I suppose we could look at that, but we have not indicated in any way that it would be a position that would be compensated.
We don't do that for other volunteer boards.
I'm just asking the question. I'm not suggesting it or not. Just
it's one of
curious.
Those boards, you know, that you do for love. Love of public service.
Well,
the
reason, I mean, this is this one has... Not that our advisory boards in other venues don't have serious work to do. What this group comes back with in a recommendation in March of 2012 will affect a lot of people in the county and a lot of people around this, or the seats that a lot of us are holding, if anyone chooses to run again or whatever it happens to be. So, I mean, this is a 10-year... This will have a 10-year effect, no matter how you slice it. So I'm just curious as to the answers.
In the memo, Frank, there is a provision that if they feel they need money for something like a consulting fee or training or something, they can come to us and ask for that, but they can't spend it without the approval of the legislature.
Because when we did this before, and you and I were part of that, There was some expense through our planning department and also some other departments to produce maps and whatnot that people needed. I mean, it was just a necessary expenditure.
That would be the case whether we had an independent commission or had our own commission. So that's going to have to be spent one way or the other.
Okay.
Dooley and then Brian.
I think there may have been a couple of changes that didn't get made the way I understood we made them at your committee meeting this afternoon, if you don't mind. On page 3, in letter F.
You're talking about the memorandum?
I'm talking about the memorandum.
You're looking at what, 3F?
Page 3, letter F. Actually, letter E, Frank, is where the expenses is referenced. Letter F, maps shall be made available. We changed the verb there to shall. And it didn't get typed in. And I didn't know whether that was manifest or not. That's why I'm mentioning it. In the resolution itself, the final resolved, we went back and forth so many times, but I thought we had come out with the shorter version of it. Which said, as outlined in the charge or other relevant provisions in the memorandum.
I'm sorry, Julie, where are you?
I'm in the last resolved of the resolution. I thought we finally wound up with the shorter version, and this is the longer version.
I thought this was the shorter version.
The shorter version would be, as outlined in the charter, not manner described and inconsistent with.
Which one are you on, Bill? I'm sorry.
Peter, Bat, Pat, what? Is this what we agreed to?
I think so.
I think it is.
That's what Peter had wanted, but I thought we wound up with the shorter one. Okay.
So the language we're looking at here.
We'd leave that.
Thank you. Brian?
Just when I reviewed this the other day, just one small thing. Obviously, this is a very, very important endeavor that this commission is going to hold. And if a commission is going for more than a year, which this could very well be, and it is volunteer, I might suggest that you think about, I know why you need 9 members on there. You need not a member to break any ties within the commission on any of their discussions. You might want to think about having an alternate or two, because you know people's jobs change. They move out of town. They do this. They do that. Just to keep the continuity of the commission.
Are you suggesting during the review process that we might say these are 9 for our first recommendation, and there'd be 2 more we'd want to look at if someone resigned?
I would say. Right off the bat, have an alternate or two that can step in if for some reason someone has to leave.
Like an alternate jury member. I mean, so somebody who we would ask to be there at all the meetings, but then they don't have a vote unless...
There's
idea?
The rub.
Right.
You know?
That's an interesting idea, really is.
Like I said, it's just something that jumped out at me. Rather than having to start somebody from scratch, you know, three quarters of the way through the process.
Mm-hmm. Dooley?
Well, the time of completion is March 1st, 2012, so they're supposed to end in less than a year. And I think it's an interesting suggestion you're making, but maybe it doesn't have to be a change made to this document, but when the time comes for the legislature to appoint members, the legislature could decide that then.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care if it's in here or not. It's the,
no,
it's the concept.
It's worth talking about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Kathy, Carol, Will.
Thank you. On page 3 of the memorandum, the G and H, the last two items, it says the commission shall publicize its activities, and under item H, meetings of the commission shall be open to the public. As you all know, I have a concern about notice being given to not just members of the public, but also members of the committee. So I wonder if we could consider, for our various meetings, we have a, 72 hours a week that we suggest between the time the notice goes out to the public and the time the meeting takes place? I think it varies. But it would be nice if we could give an idea. Otherwise, you might have a situation where, say, a notice of a meeting went out at 1:30 and the meeting was held that afternoon at 3:30. Sure, the public could come. If they heard about it, it could make it. So just as a transparency issue, I think it would be nice if we could suggest or even state how much notice, public notice, should be given. When it says the commission shall publicize its activities, I'm not sure if that just means they'll talk about what they did after they did it, or if the meetings, there will be public notice of the meetings given ahead of time so that the public can actually attend the meetings. Does anybody follow where I'm going with this? And
I think
Pat
has an answer for that.
Well, I'm not sure if it's an answer or not, but Kathy, I just wonder what the statement you made at the beginning made me think that you may be looking at a previous version, but I'm not positive that.
Oh, that's entirely possible.
Do you have the one with the red?
The memorandum I have doesn't have any red on it.
Okay, there should be one someplace on your desk.
And does the one that you're saying that I should refer to have anything about...
Here's what it says, and I don't know if this addresses your concern, but it says, the commission shall be subject to the Open Meetings Law and Freedom of Information Act. which I believe speaks to notice for meetings.
Could we be specific about that particular aspect of it? Because I think right now we're talking in generalities. I'd like to have it be part of the record as to how far in advance public notice of meetings has to be made to the public. That's what I'd like.
All right, let me ask Kathy or Jonathan. The being subject to the open meetings law specifies exactly what, so the record will show.
I believe the minimum requirement is 48 hours.
I believe so. I don't see it in front of me except for it provides for emergency meetings, et cetera.
Okay.
We try to give 1 week notice when we can, but for special meetings, it's 48 hours.
I've got Carol, Will, and Desi, Dave, or somebody. Okay, Dave, Carol?
Yeah, I understand all the reasons that people, there seems to be a majority supporting this, and that this year the winds, the political winds are to go towards totally independent, supposedly independent commissions. I'm not sure. I mean, I'll hear the rest of the discussion. I'm not sure I can support it. I'm not going to try to sway a lot of minds, but I do want to give you the reasons that I'm not sure that I can. I believe in some open political representation on redistricting commissions. I was on the Government Operations Committee in the early phases of this, last year. I'm not on it now. And as we discussed at that point, I don't believe there's such a thing as an unbiased view of political matters and of population. Demographics are complicated. Communities are complicated. Communities of interest are complicated. And I looked carefully at all the materials from the Brennan Center that looks at this carefully. And they didn't take a final position, but they did lay out the pitfalls of both methods. But in particular, the pitfalls that have come across the country at certain historical stages, including riots and discontent, resulting from an actual or perceived lack of representation in ultimate way political lines are drawn. And they used examples like the Korean community in LA that there was no particular political representation. It was a district that had been sort of broken up in the interest of demographics to make equal sized districts around it, and it ended up being a problem. That was the most dramatic representation of example that was given in that report. And so I would prefer, but on the other hand, I get the impulse towards trying to go for something independent because the political representation has become untenable. So I would have preferred to see just maybe two or three of the nine members represent the major political parties and maybe one representative from minor political parties in a way that would make two of those nine people, people who are directly accountable to voters, people directly responsible for the kinds of decisions that we make here, where we hear week after week about the implications that some of our decisions have on unintended consequences on constituencies. So for those reasons, I just did this move towards totally independent redistricting commissions. I think it's possible in a decade, over a decade, it could come back to haunt us a little bit. And but that's, I'll just lay that out there.
Thank okay. You. Will, Dave, Pat, Nathan.
Well, thank Carol for a thoughtful critique of this, and thank the committee for it. It was the incredible work in laying out a series of steps on a very complicated process. Carol, unlike you, I think I am drawn to the idea of an independent body, but
something I'm a little unclear of in terms of the wording of the resolution and the memorandum. Mike, maybe you can help me. In the final step, it is still the up to this legislature to accept or reject this plan. Is that correct?
That's correct. The legislature would have to adopt the local law setting forth the redistricting plan for the next election.
And we would indeed have the ability, you outlined a process where we can send something back to committee with questions or suggestions for change, but only once, and that it would then come back. Will we, under this process, be able to offer amendments or reject entirely and do a different plan? Is that allowed under the wording of this?
In the very end, yes, the legislature can do that because it has the authority and the requirement under the charter to adopt the plan. However, if we're going through this process with an independent commission, I, for one, would be very reluctant to want to overrule them unless there was some terrible injustice in the plan that we were reviewing.
Thank you.
Okay, Mike and Will. Dave?
Yeah, I just wanted to address Kathy's question about the open meetings. I believe that there'll be public notice of the initial meeting, and they will set up a subsequent schedule for other meetings, which will also be public notice and can also get posted on the website. So I don't see it should be a big issue.
Okay, Pat? I think between the things that Will and Mike just said, though, what I was going to say was addressed. So,
okay, Nathan.
I was just going to say that. Well, Carol, I appreciated your comments. They were very concise, and I had those same concerns too. And I think, as Will just said, you know, that we will, and Mike has reiterated, you know, the county will be, the legislature will be voting on it. So there is that accountability factor. But also, education is key. The more we educate the people about communities of interest and other legal issues, precedent that's happened, you know, with court cases that have gone up to the Supreme Court about redistricting, then we can, you know, at least prevent a lot of the major problems that happen with a independent redistricting body. You know, so I'll be supportive of it.
And I think there's, you know, we're not sending them off and we'll never see them again until March next year. I mean, you know, I certainly hope many of us will go to as many of their meetings as we can, and they're certainly going to be involving the public, et cetera. So, Kathy?
Thank you. I was pleased to see that on my desk was a copy of this with the red additions. Again, it's, for me, something I just got a chance to examine, something that is a surprise to me to see. I'm happy to see it, but this happens more and more where I get substantive changes that are on my desk at the beginning of the meeting I don't have a chance to look at. So I'm glad that it says subject to open meeting law and Freedom of Information Act, and I hear what you say, and Dave, that there will probably set up a regular schedule. That's wonderful in theory. In practice, what we've been having on the county legislature is a series of panicked emergency meetings that are called on very short notice. So I just wanted to go on record as saying it would be in the public's best interest, and I really appreciate the work of the committee to be consistent with the idea of a nonpartisan committee that's open and transparent, and y'all could actually school us on how to have predictable meetings that are held that are given plenty of public notice, and that perhaps the things that are going to be discussed are published ahead of time so that the public and the members of the committee can peruse them.
Are we ready to vote? All in favor of resolution? You have something to say, you're ready to vote. You're eager to vote, Jim?
I am.
Okay. All in favor of resolution H, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That passes 14 to 1. And I would like to get a copy of this put together and copies of this, and I would like to send it with a letter to our governor and the legislative leaders in Albany to point out that maybe they should follow our lead. So thank you very much to the GO Committee on this. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Carol Chalk, we leapfrogged over you before. So.
Okay, great. Now I've got all this redistricting stuff out on my desk. Okay. So I want to
I would just like to start by thanking I'll thank the legislature for passing the four resolutions that were part of the consent agenda, and I want to thank in particular the members of the committee and the staff. This committee has had just an incredible amount of work to do in the last few months, this month in particular, and people were very patient, stayed late to deal with the amount of work that we had. I will jump right to the resolution we put on the agenda, the authorization to execute construction funding agreement with New York State DOT Newfield Depot Road Bridge over Cayuga Inlet, and I so move.
Is there a second? Dave seconds that.
Okay. I thank you for can I speak to it now? Thank everybody for agreeing to put this on the agenda. This allows us to go ahead and continue the process whereby we will be able to receive the New York State, the federal money that comes through the New York State Department of Transportation. This is a project that the legislature approved in 2005, approved a design in 2009, and we have been proceeding. And our staff, with great apologies, came and said that the process for getting reimbursed by the New York State DOT has changed since the last time we engaged in this process. The former process, we would bid the project and then pass this resolution, and the process has now, and that was how it was logged in their time frame, and the DOT has now changed it to one whereby we need to proceed this way and then put in for reimbursement for the share of the $976,000, which I guess would be 80% of that would get reimbursed. So that's what this is about.
Okay.
Is there questions?
All right. We ready to vote? All in favor of resolution? Aye. Please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you. In other parts of my report, I will point out on the resolutions you passed already, the parking lots at the airport terminal. Users of the airport should see increased service, especially regarding snow removal. This new contract, I think you'll come back and not quite have your car dug out for you, but at least it won't be so difficult if snow has fallen while you're away to dig yourself out. And other improvements as well. The bridge painting, there were some questions that I got asked from people who saw this in the packet, and I do want to report that I went back and checked. This bridge painting is something that we have been planning for over 10 years. We don't do it very frequently. It takes 7 to 8 years to get through the federal process to get the federal funds for the painting, and it's become very specialized work due to lead paint removal dangers. It requires specialized personnel, equipment, including negative pressure containment equipment, stringing cables and fencing under the bridge, liability issues, and this would cost us a great deal more to be doing this in-house. And I will point out on the solid waste hauling and disposal service resolution that you passed that you should, I hope you noted the drop in price that this is from $49.23 a ton to $44.66 a ton. Barbara Ekstrom has done a real yeoman's job negotiating this contract. It's a three-year contract rather than 5 years because she believes that the pricing is quite volatile right now. And as a bonus, there is no fuel surcharge in this contract either. So thank you, Barbara. Arell reported to us in the committee meeting that he should be ready to begin repairs to the old courthouse facade in mid-April. So you should see that happening as you walk by. Solid waste recycling. This first look at our new logo that you will see distributed as part of your recycling. It'll come to people in your recycling bins in the next few weeks. There's instructions on the back. It allows, this is as part of the switch to single stream recycling. You can use your existing containers, or you can purchase your own that is, as Barbara says, right-sized for you and put this logo, this new logo, right on that. The rollout for that campaign is going to include public education. It's going to include working with schools. They are still developing a plan for county offices. Barb is very happy with the firm, FCR. They've hired 7 of the original employees, including 1 female loader. And Barb brought Dan Kurtz from FCR to our meeting, who had worked with the city of Ann Arbor and cited his particular experience working with a community that's been educated and particularly caring about environmentally responsible disposal of solid waste. I'm mixing things these up, but we heard from both of these things. We saw beautifully done drawings of the facility that they are building. And for people here, the June F&I meeting will be held at the Solid Waste Center, and we are all invited to a groundbreaking. So the agenda for that meeting will include the final parts of the meeting being our business we need to do with solid waste and moving right into that groundbreaking. It'll be, that's June 3rd, is that Friday? Is that the right day of the week? And it'll be around midday, 11 o'clock or so is the time we would probably get to that. But you'll hear more about that. Highway. We are, F&I is beginning to look at the process, our current process for public notification of highway projects. What is our current process before deciding on whether we want to recommend any tweaks to that process? And then I will say a word about road preservation. Martha mentioned that we held a meeting on March 29th. We heard from stakeholders. This was the second meeting we had of that nature. We had a short presentation from staff. Our staff continue to adjust their recommendation on the road preservation draft that you all have seen due to comments from and questions from both our group, the legislature, and the public, and the stakeholders. We are still, I think, on course with the general approach that we had decided to take. We want to continue to be responsive to our towns and their need to move forward with their own resolutions. We want to be responsive to the stakeholders and, of course, to the public interest of the taxpayers who pay for the roads that we all use. While there will never be full agreement on all of the points and details of this law, I think that at that meeting on the 29th, people made very clear that how much they appreciated our engaging in the process that we have and really ended the meeting with thanks to us for listening and revisiting the elements of this law that we are looking at. The decisions, the F&I outlined kind of the decisions that probably will have to be faced by the legislature as this comes back to us. We don't have something to bring back to you yet, but we will have to confirm this legal approach, which I think our staff is recommending that we do. We will, we're looking at how to incorporate road use agreements into the body of our resolution. We probably will not do that instead of our resolution, but that was one of the appeals to us. We're looking at the technical threshold levels, the axles, the weights, the frequency, the issue of bonding and how we're going to handle the bonding and the size of the bonds and the method for bonding and the exempted activities. So those are the items you will probably see come back. So the committee's done a lot of work. If there are questions, I'm happy to answer them or additions.
Thank
people.
You, Carol. Dave?
Just one addition. I was at Solid Waste the other day, and it appears that the new scales are both in place now and functional.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. Thank you very much, Carol. Pam's out of the room. Budget and Capital Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. We will have a meeting Monday afternoon at 3:30. You're all very aware the budget passed at the state level, and we'll begin to think about the rest of the 2011 and how that all affects what we do in the Budget Committee and Legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
We had a meeting yesterday, I guess. Seems like a long time ago, but it was only yesterday, right? And at that meeting, we continued our program for listening to the various department heads of the departments that report to the Public Safety Committee. We heard this time from Wes McDermott talking about the assigned counsel program. The assigned counsel program cost us, it's the ultimate in mandates. It costs us a lot of money, and we have absolutely no discretion as to whether or not we pay and what we pay. We have no control over it. We get a certain, we get a relatively modest amount of money from the state, and over the past several years, the policy of the state has been a very strange policy. I was sitting here trying to think of a good way to describe it. One would be ratchet down, another would be race to the bottom, the other would be a search for the lowest common denominator. But it was the strangest system whereby if the expenditures you made on hiring lawyers for indigent defendants decreased because the number of crimes decreased, that permanently reduced the amount of money that you would get from the state. So it could only go down, it couldn't go up. And if crime, if, as I say, if a statistical fluctuation went up, you didn't get any more money, but if a statistical fluctuation pushed it down, you lost the money. Apparently, my understanding is at the moment that that policy in the years to come, or in at least the 1 year to come, will be relaxed. That is to say, it will not automatically ratchet down. Let's hope that it really won't ratchet down. The other thing I have to report is that the attempt to conduct what's called, I guess, to the law enforcement people, targeted speeding enforcement, is that the right word? Brian?
Yes, me.
Huh?
I always called it directed.
Yeah, directed, I think. It's directed,
targeted,
yeah.
Whatever.
Speed enforcement, where instead of just enforcing it at where the officers happen to be at that time or spreading it around the county, there's an attempt to focus the enforcement on places that are most injurious to the quality of life. We're planning a public announcement of the program and trying to get cooperation, and will try to get And by the way, we here is mostly the sheriff. We'll be attempting to get help from all the other people in the area that have the ability to write traffic tickets. And I think that's all I have to report.
Thank you, Peter. Jim.
The only thing I want to say about the indigent defense is that while Peter was describing what how it works at the state level and the local level, Tompkins County has, admittedly so spent a lot of money on that, but we have a way better than average indigent defense
Association operating for those less fortunate needing lawyer help in the courts. So while there's a downside to the spending, there's an upside to those people who need to have decent lawyers, and this county has done a way better than average job in operating a program like this.
Peter.
Yeah, I guess I meant to say a sentence or two about that. One of the words that's really bad around this table is mandates. You hear the word mandates and you know bad. But there's an upside to mandates. And I think we would all agree around this table that it is a good thing for a county to use its tax money to make sure that everyone who is accused of a crime gets a decent hearing at the court where their case is heard. And that, in fact, is a mandate. We're required to pay for it, but I, for one, am happy to pay that mandate.
Thank you, Peter. Brian.
Just a little bit of I hesitate to say correction, but I don't think mandate's a bad word. Unfunded is certainly a bad word.
Right.
And we all know that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think this is our position is not whether these programs should be provided to citizens, to residents in New York State. It's the funding equation and the responsibility that falls to us. Right. Anything else for Peter? Thank you, Peter. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Pam Akasey, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. PDAC will be meeting tomorrow at 3:30 in the old jail. And come, and it will be an exciting meeting, as it always is. All are welcome.
Thank you. We have minutes of March 15th and March 22nd meetings. Can I get a motion on Frank, one, or both?
Both.
Both sets. Duly.
I would like to separate them. I want to vote for one and against them.
I saw Leslin seconding the measure for both. Do you want to move to separate?
I move to separate.
Is there a second to separate? Pam seconds that. So the motion is to separate. Is there any discussion? All in favor of moving to separate, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Peter, did you raise your hand?
I raised it the first time.
Okay.
To support the separation.
Okay. I'm sorry. What do we got? Please raise your hand if you're opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The motion to separate fails. So we have the both sets of minutes. Is there any comment, suggestions? Ready to vote. All in favor of both sets of minutes, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Opposed. 2 opposed. Those minutes passed. 11-2. I believe we're ready for a motion to adjourn. All right. Peter moves. Frank seconds. All in favor of adjournment. All right. Thank you all. See you soon.